Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Jennifer Law, your host, joined by Cicely Marie, my co-host and producer, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Welcome to Venus Rising, where Cicely Marie and I have a very special guest back with us today, Callie Fowle. If you missed our earlier podcast with Callie, she talked about the basics of female reproduction, and I encourage you to listen to that really important educational podcast we did. Callie is our research assistant here at the Center for Bioethics and Culture. She also works at a university hospital as a labor and delivery nurse. In her previous life, she worked as a scientist in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Vanderbilt University. She has her master's degree in reproductive physiology and did research in endometriosis and preterm birth. Callie's passionate about women's health, and I'm sure you'll pick up on that as we get chatting with her about female reproduction. So welcome back to Venus Rising, Callie.
Thank you so much. It's always fun to hang out with you ladies. We love having you here.
We do. Get your cup of coffee, ladies. We're going to talk all things reproduction. Callie, you've been such a tremendous support for me personally, of course, to our followers at the Center for Bioethics and Culture. You're always reading and analyzing and interpreting the latest study that's come out in the medical scientific journals and literature. And then you you dumb it down for us. So what does this study really mean? Can you just break it down? I'm just curious, you know, the work that you do for us to help us better understand the kind of cutting edge science and research in human reproduction. Does that help you in your practice at the hospital?
Yeah, I think so. Medicine, like most things, is constantly changing, evolving. New research is coming out, like you alluded to. It's important for us nurses, and really any clinical setting, I think you could probably relate to this, Jennifer, to continue to learn and read literature so that we can better understand our current field of practice and the changes that are occurring. I also think, actually, the opposite is true as well. I think my current work as a nurse, especially here in the Bay Area, gives me a front seat, if you will, to the experience, to experience what I might be currently working on in the CBC. So I have the opportunity to care for women who are experiencing the heartbreak of infertility or who have might use the treatment that I've just read about.
Right. So, Callie, one of your most popular pieces that you wrote for us at the CBC was your analysis of a study that came out in the prestigious journal Fertility and Sterility, FERT and STERT, as you lovingly referred to it. This important study showed how surrogate pregnancies are different than a naturally conceived pregnancy. Can you talk a little bit about this study and the findings?
Sure, absolutely. I think that the article you're referring to is written by Dr. Wu and her team, and they're in Los Angeles.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay. This is a really important study, and it was one of the first to look at data from women who experienced both their own spontaneous pregnancy or natural pregnancy and birth, as well as an IVF pregnancy as part of a surrogacy arrangement. So in order to be included in this study, and it was a retrospective study, a woman would have to have first her own pregnancy as well as a surrogacy pregnancy. So just before I go on, that's important that you understand that the same woman had two different birth experiences. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Totally makes sense. And for our listeners, a retrospective study is looking back, things that have already happened, and analyzing the data from something that's already happened.
Correct. And those studies are easier to perform. Sometimes they have their own biases in there, but it's hard to get women who are actively pregnant to contribute in studies. I mean, not a lot of pregnant women are going to be like, sign me up for this study. But after the fact, we can look at their charts and their medical records. So yes, it's a study that looks back in time. So to continue with this study, the control group in this study then was the natural or spontaneous pregnancy of each woman. So each woman was both the control group and the test group. This allowed the researchers to evaluate the effect of assisted reproductive therapies, so mainly IVF or in vitro fertilization, on the birth experience and outcome. And so, shockingly, the authors found that babies born from commission embryos or embryos made from IVF and carried by the gestational surrogate or a woman who had no genetic relationship to that embryo had increased incidences of preterm birth, low birth weight babies, maternal gestational diabetes, hypertension, so maternal hypertension, and placental previa. And that's where the placenta grows where it's not supposed to. These pregnancies, the IVF surrogacy pregnancies, were also more likely to end in a C-section or cesarean section rather than a vaginal birth, which C-sections can be done safely, but they do have more risks. Surgery is more risky.
Absolutely.
That's why you have to sign consent for surgery. So this is a big deal. This study showed that pregnancy outcomes for spontaneous or natural pregnancies and then outcomes for surrogate pregnancies were significantly different and had significantly different outcomes.
I just wanted to stop and like ponder that. And when you think about the gestational surrogate mother, I hate the word gestational surrogate. This is so dehumanizing. This is a woman who most likely has small little children at home.
Yes.
Of her own.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we intentionally, on purpose, put her into a high-risk situation, mm-hmm. knowingly. Mm-hmm. And I use this study in your analysis of it in all of my travels. I remember being in Geneva, Switzerland last year, speaking at the United Nations, and the woman to my right on the panel from France was like, can I have a copy of that study? So even though it's out in the prestigious Fertility and Sterility Journal, it's still, if you don't know it's out there, you don't find it. She was like, let me get my hands on that, you know, because this will help us in France as we're trying to educate policymakers on the risks of surrogate pregnancies.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, well done.
Well, Kelly, you're also involved with some research working with Jennifer and Dr. Melissa Farley looking at surrogacy. Can you tell us a little bit about your role here and what you found to date?
So I think back in April last year, so April 2018, Jennifer first emailed me about her idea to start a research project that would study the effects of surrogacy in women. The goal for the project is pretty simple. It's to obtain information from women that have served as surrogates so that we can better understand the physical, emotional, and psychosocial effects of surrogacy. So Jennifer and her partner in crime, as she calls her, Melissa Farley, they had already been discussing about how to take on a project of this magnitude. And I remember in that initial email, Jennifer wrote, it's groundbreaking project, but will be work. Ground doesn't always break easily. And you are definitely right. Since that initial email, we have developed a questionnaire for women to respond to, either in person or over the phone through an interview. And then I've also been working with Melissa to create an annotated bibliography, which is basically a fancy term for work of all of the literature that's currently published concerning surrogacy, so that we know exactly what's already been done, what's been found, who found it. And that work is still not done, but as to quote Jennifer, we're breaking ground slowly.
I mean, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here because you're still developing that bibliography. Are you seeing kind of themes or glaring gaps where there's just an absence of any kind of, I mean, we just are asking women to be surrogates, you know, are we asking them on the basis of actually no data whatsoever?
Pretty much. There's not a lot. There's a couple of law cases that we've looked at. But the research is lacking, to put it lightly. There's really not a ton that shows quantitative, qualitative data that we're looking to find through our questionnaire.
Yeah. And, you know, Melissa really encouraged me that we'll find it, but we have to do the study and we have to go looking for it. And,
yeah.
and as you know, of your background in research, this takes a lot of money. I mean, it's not cheap to do these kind of studies. And, you know, the aim is to actually survey and interview 100 mm-hmm. U.S. We're just looking at the experience of American surrogates right now as a place to start and to see what we find. And, you know, her work, Melissa Farley's work, has mostly been in the space of prostitution and women coming out of prostitution. And as she's learned more about our work in surrogacy, she sees so many parallels to post-traumatic stress, you know, and just sort of the negative impact of women giving birth and surrendering children. So anyway, we're hopeful that we will break that ground sooner versus
yes,
later.
Yes.
Let's talk about another article that you analyzed for us. Again, it came out in Furt and Sturt. I always just thought I was the only one that called Furt and Sturt.
You're not alone.
Yeah, now I just know everybody calls it that. But you were, this is an article that looked at the complications around egg harvesting. Tell us what the implications are to women who have their own, had their eggs harvested for their own IVF, their own babies, or they've just been egg donors to help somebody else have a baby.
Yeah, this, I keep saying that this is so important, but it's all important. So I'm going to say it again. This is an important thing to address. I remember, and it hits a little bit closer to home, because I remember being a college student and first hearing about egg donation. And me and one of my friends in particular thought that selling our eggs was a fantastic way to pay for some of our expenses for college. I mean, we were thinking spring break, books, extra, you know, all the things. And we thought, this is amazing. Why don't we do this? We'll be able to help someone and pay for things. All we saw were dollar signs, as I think a lot of 20-year-olds. And then, you know, I'm so glad none of us went through with it. Luckily, we had parents who cautioned us and we listened. We were completely naive about any risks that might be involved. But really, for us, it was we couldn't get past the idea that our child might be in the world without our knowledge. And for us, that's kind of what stopped us too. But I digress. Egg donation, surrogacy, and IVF all require oocyte retrieval. Remember back in the initial podcast time, kind of talked about women's reproduction. So oocyte is just a fancy word for egg, which is released from the ovary. Little quiz there. To create a baby, you have to have an egg from the female and a sperm from a male. So oocyte, or egg retrieval, is a procedure where doctors remove an egg or multiple eggs from a woman's body. The gold standard kind of way to remove an egg from a woman's body is via ultrasound-guided transvaginal route. It's a less invasive method and was actually first performed about 30, 40 years ago. Egg harvesting isn't without its risks. And in this study that you're referring to, researchers found that the egg harvesting procedure itself could cause many risks, and some of those were bleeding into the abdominal cavity, vaginal wall lacerations and bleeding, bladder trauma, pelvic pain and infection, which includes sepsis or inflammation of the pelvic area. These are big risks. Remarkably, this study also revealed that patients experiencing these complications tended to be younger, thinner, and had a higher number of oocytes retrieved. And does that sound like any population you might know?
Exactly. Like our college girls. And quite honestly, I had a girlfriend that told me about being in college and being, you know, quote unquote, targeted for her eggs and how she thought it was a great idea. And she did go through with it. And now we're looking at her 12, 13 years later, and she's having different reproductive issues, and she then found out about the CBC, and she's like, okay, these were not things that were discussed with me. I just, like you, Kelly, she saw dollar signs and she's like, I need to pay for things, and I'm young and I'm healthy, so why not do this? And the issue of having a child out in the world was not a big deal to her because she signed paperwork saying if this ever did happen, I want there to be, the child can meet me. So mm-hmm. She thought she was crossing her T's and dotting her I's and doing all of the right things. And now she is starting to dig into what are the issues behind this? Like, what wasn't I told? What was I not warned about? Because now she's starting to have issues and it's the first thing. And now this is on the forefront of her mind, yeah. You know?
And I think in this particular study, in your analysis of it, you talked about what they didn't even report on. Like, I don't think they tracked ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome,
right,
which is a real big, you know, risk factor for especially the egg donor.
For sure. This study didn't include anything outside of just the procedure by itself. So this didn't include the medications that the women went on beforehand, because you don't just go collect eggs. You have to be on medication to kind of create an abundance of eggs. And so ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome that you refer to, it's a condition that occurs when a woman takes those fertility medications to stimulate egg growth so that more eggs can be harvested. It can lead to a woman's own fertility, like your friend might be seeing, and even death. And young women who are often the targets of this are at a higher risk for developing this syndrome too. So.
And, you know, we clearly saw that in exploitation where one of the egg donors, Alexandra, they got 60 eggs from her in one cycle. And Cindy in the film talks about how she was treated one way as an egg donor. And then when she later on went on to have her own fertility problems, she became the patient and how she was treated so different. And the whole experience of having to be the patient versus the donor. So we know that the egg donor is intentionally put on higher doses of fertility drugs and more aggressively stimulated, which again leads them to be more at risk.
Now, for someone who maybe is not, doesn't understand the gravity of gathering 60 eggs from a woman in one shot, can we just remind our listeners again, how this process kind of works in a nutshell, and just how grave 60 eggs in one gathering actually is.
Okay, so the egg donor is put on very high doses in order to produce lots of eggs. Because if you're paying a donor, say, $50,000 or $10,000, do you want one egg or do you want as many as you can get?
Right.
Because then the egg broker can then go and sell those eggs to multiple people to make more money. So while the egg donors pay one fee, the agency has an incentive to get more eggs to go out and sell them.
So that they can continue profiting on this one egg donor.
And when you think of how, like Callie just explained, the procedure for retrieving the egg, it's not like they just go up with a catheter through the vagina and suck out all 60 eggs. That's a needle stick, a needle stick, a needle stick for retrieving each egg, each egg. So back to Cindy in the film, they actually accidentally nicked an artery near her ovary in retrieving because she was so stimulated they had to go in and retrieve all these eggs. So in nicking the artery and all these little needle pokes to suck out all these little, think of a bunch of grapes and you're just having to go in and suck out each little grape off of the vine. They nicked an artery and she almost bled to death. So, and these women talk about how their ovaries get like the size of grapefruits.
Right.
There's so much fluid that's associated with this ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. So they talk about when they walk, they can feel their ovaries kind of sloshing around in their belly. Well, normally women don't feel their ovaries. You can't. You
know, right. That's not a daily occurrence. I don't look at my friends and say, I feel my ovaries today.
Yeah. And these are just the short-term risks that these women have. And then they go on and have the longer-term risks, like complications with their own fertility, or the two women in the film that have strokes. You know, a stroke leaves you with, you know, a lot of long-term complications.
Absolutely, and far more than any compensation that you're going to get in the immediate. You know, we talk about seeing dollar signs and, okay, great, but then the long-term, is that going to cover your health care and the issues that are coming up later? No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not. And what then? What do you do then?
And back to, Callie, what you're finding in doing the research, searching for research, I guess, in surrogacy, you know, there's this a paltry of studies done on egg donors and what are the risks to them and what kind of complications that they have. So anyway, one of the things that you do for us around CBC land is you read books and review them. We get sent so many books to the office that people want us to read their books and review them because that's obviously how people sell books. Are there any particular books that you've read and reviewed for us that you think our listeners should run to the bookstore right now or in the Amazon to buy?
Yes. and I think there are different books for different populations of people, what you're kind of into. So I'm going to give a little tasting on each and then that way people can kind of know which one, but yeah, absolutely do recommend people to read these books. But, the first one that I ever read for the CBC was a book by Renata Klein, and it's titled Surrogacy, a Human Rights Violation. In her book, she exposes the potential harms and ethical dilemmas of surrogacy that are often not considered by infertile couples who are hope-filled and also the women that sign up to be surrogates. And these women volunteer, you know, they want to help an infertile couple. So she talks about those dilemmas in that light. She calls surrogacy, quote, the latest frontier of violence against women, end quote. And you can just tell by that quote how passionate Renata is. And I think this is an excellent book for those who are just starting to learn about surrogacy and those who want to look at surrogacy kind of under an ethical microscope. I think it's a great, great beginner book. It's small. It's compact. It's a good book. Secondly, I really, really enjoyed the work by Sheila Saravanan. I'm saying her last name right. Specifically, her book titled A Transnational Feminist View of Surrogacy Biomarkets in India. It's kind of a lengthy one there, but a good read. While I was reading her book, I just kept thinking about the fictional work of Margaret Atwood. I think a lot of people are familiar with that. And I just kept reading it thinking, wow, this is really happening. This is just like Margaret Atwood.
A Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, exactly. Sheila's research is in Western India, and it revealed, ongoing illegal surrogacy cases, near-death situations of surrogate mothers who are kept in houses separate from their families, neonatal and perinatal mortality, so death of infants, unreported abandonment of infants who were wanted or were wanted, and even financial exploitation of the intended parents. And I'm so grateful. India has since decided to make surrogacy illegal, but I think that her book is wonderful. Anyone trying to grasp the global impact of cross-border surrogacy, I think it is helpful. Lastly, the book co-authored by our own Jennifer Law here, Broken Bonds, Surrogate Mothers Speak Out, is what the book's called. And this is an excellent book for readers who like to read from personal accounts and want a personal perspective. It gives surrogate mothers across the globe. I think you talked to different women all over the world, and they each tell their personal story. And it's also a really good read. So those are the three books. Go out and get it, whatever you're interested in. I think we got one for everyone.
I had the privilege of speaking at a conference in Australia this past year, and Sheila was there. And Renata Klein hosted the conference, so it was fun to finally meet these women. But Sheila, in her presentation, talked about when she was doing her research interviews with the surrogate mothers in India, how often she would have to just stop the interview because the surrogate mothers were weeping and crying so bad. They were so overcome with the loss of the children, not knowing what's happened to them. She talked about one woman, when she interviewed her, she said, "Do you have any pictures of you with the baby that you gave birth to?" And she showed her one little color photo, and she said, "Oh, it must have been nice to, you know, be given this photo." She said, "Oh no, it was just taken as a photo op."
Wow.
So she still has absolutely no idea. It was, she said, they basically just put the baby in her arms so they could snap the picture, you know, so that it could be for use for publicity. But Sheila's work was so is so important. So,
and I think a lot of women that are looking at egg donation, again, going back to like college students, like we're really not thinking of the long-term outside effects. Like biologically, as a woman, you're going to carry a child and you're going to be connected to that child, whether it is your DNA or not. And for women who think, oh, okay, I can just carry this child and hand it off and not ever think about this baby again, like, can you really? Can you actually do that? And that is a huge risk. That is a very, very huge risk to play around with if you're not sure. That's a big risk.
And in Sheila's case, it wasn't as if these women signed up and said, no, I don't ever want to see the kid again or the baby again. The intended parents and the fertility clinics all lied to these women saying that you would get to stay in contact with the women. And then they weren't. So it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
You know, Kelly, are there any other pieces that you've written for us here at the CBC that you want to highlight or that you found particularly compelling that you want to share with our listeners?
It's really hard to narrow down any one piece because I find that all the work we do here at the CBC is very important, as I've said probably 8 times during this podcast. But I think I would like to draw attention to our study guide. I don't think a lot of people know about it. It's called Think Again. And it examines the legal, medical, and ethical questions of third-party reproduction, which is what we're all about here. I can't take personal credit for the content in this study guide, but I did update it earlier this year, and I think it's a really great resource that we offer for absolutely free. It's intended for a wide audience, so you can do it by yourself, study alone. You can use it in a group setting with friends or colleagues, however, you know, you find fit. But the study guide does coincide really well with the films that Jennifer's produced, and those can also be found on Amazon free if you're a Prime member. But yeah, I think that those are really great resources, and of course, all the other work we do can be found on the website too. Yeah, I could chat forever about all of the stuff we've written and worked on, but yeah.
Well, thank you so much for all of our listeners. All of the links to our books will be available in the podcast, as well as our movies. Like Callie mentioned, you can find those on cbc-network.org, or if you are an Amazon Prime member, you can find them for free on Amazon. Callie, thank you again for being with us today. We love having you here. You are always welcome. And for all of our listeners, thank you so much for supporting the CBC and for joining us for our educational talks. We are always encouraging you to think beyond the masses.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising with Jennifer and Cicely. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.